We want to give everybody
a chance to share, and I don't think that's going to be a problem tonight.
Sure.
Hey, it's my pleasure to introduce my friend from Tulare. This is John W.
Hello, everyone. John, I see it's my face, but it's a right there. So, anyway, John, I called. Good to be here today, or tonight. I'm going to put the mask on because I am an x-ray tech working in a hospital, and I've seen people die. So, it's just like I'm kind of a gun shy about that. Anyway, but I'd like to welcome all the newcomers, because any newcomers here tonight. And is it Greg? Welcome, Greg.
Thanks.
Anyway, my story is starts back when I started drinking back in 8th grade. And when I was, Courtney R. from Tulare. But Courtney was a neighbor of mine across the street out there on 148 in Tulare, out in the country. And he, had some beer or whatever that we'd stash away from my dad's fridge every few weeks. And about a month or so, we had enough beer to drink. And we had a beer out in his burn pile, burn pit on the, behind his house. And that was my first blackout. I came home and I did not remember anything coming home. And the one thing I do remember though is the feeling of being free, the feeling of being just totally have a different mindset than I had before. And it was a real different feeling. The chase started right then and there in my first drink. So the chase of that feeling of being free or feeling of being apart from reality or whatever, or just apart from how I normally was, which was fearful and scared and just not really sure of myself, I became a bulletproof without the alcohol, and it just continued on. I remember the time I was in the sandbox of the Sunbelt School when I was in kindergarten. Some kid, the traits of my self-centeredness, or the traits of my, that seemed very sad that we had later on in my life, started back then. It was I had a nice big old Tonka truck, and I had was playing with it in the sandbox, and some kid came along, and I was probably bragging about the truck, how cool my truck was, and how better I was than anyone else. And some kid came along with a big old rock and smashed it. And I had that feeling of, why me? Why me? And why am I having such a cheating life? But I can achieve time. So that feeling kind of was pervasive up throughout my drink, because of my self-centeredness, my roles, meaning all the poor pity pot stuff going on. But back to the story of my drinking, I was my drinking continued on, and I was older than I actually was, and I would have gotten 5 years when I was in high school. I was going to stores 5 year. And that, you even bought beer at Ernie's Liquors. Ernie's used to card people all the time. Ernie's was a real hard place to buy booze from when you were young. So, I could even buy booze at Ernie's. And, the thing is, I was, people would get me, to buy a beer from them. And I'd always, get a few beers after that for doing that. You know, I'd always, if they're buy a case of beer, they always give you a six pack or so, or at least four beers. And so the thing is, I would always get my booze. And so I started drinking alcoholically from my freshman year on, and in high school. And I got in trouble my sophomore year. I went to school to a school in Carpinteria, to a boys' school and a prep school. And I got in trouble there for drinking. Got in trouble there for drinking because I was away from home and thought I had some cash and I could have fun. And I did. But I got in trouble for my drinking. And then getting in trouble for drinking, you continued on. And then I had a, and when I was a sophomore in high school, from sophomore, I had a bad car accident where I was in a coma for 28 days and in a hospital, not in the ICU. And anyway, so I recovered from that. I had that mindset in my head already that I could drink, and I could drink alcoholically, and I could just, I could buy booze for people and stuff like that. So I had a brain injury, but it was I had slow reflexes and stuff, and I even I wasn't fully really recovered then. But I went back to high school my sophomore year here at Slurry Union, and my junior year, Slurry Union, and then I started drinking right away, and I came to, I started getting trouble. I remember a manus from Slurry Union had to drive me home one night after getting drunk, but. Trying to sneak into the gas at the veterans building through one of the side doors. That dumb move, right there. The dean of the school, I started busting me and drove me home. So I immediately started getting in trouble. And I just wanted to start trying to go back to school again. And my junior year. And it was, so the thing was I was, even the first few days my last year, my junior year, so I had no jaw working. I broke my jaw in two places. So I was still recovering from the accident. So my jaw was still trying to set even then. So I was trying to speak through a wired jaw. So I was all messed up. And I was thinking, even with a wire, that was my jaw wired. Sad. But, the thing is I continued on at Fresno State. I went to Fresno State right out of high school. And, that's when the party really started, because I was away from home, and I was in the jet, and I was passing classes the day, and I was just partying with money, and it was on. And then, of course, up at Huntington Lake, which I went up to every summer between school, we'd also go up there and rent a cabin at Huntington, or finally my dad built the cabin and shaved it in the 80s, and started and got a Hobiecat sailboat. That's when I met Bill there years later. And so Bill and I have a history of partying. I think that's the best way to be honest. The thing is, just the sailing and getting drunk and whatever else is loaded with outside issues. The reason you might hear the word outside issues sometimes people talk about drugs. Because alcoholics has no opinion on that solutions. Hence the AA might even be drawn in public conference. So the thing is with that, is that, that's why we, in closed meetings, we don't talk about drugs. The perhaps only meeting, which Marcus is part of, they don't talk about drugs at all, because the sole purpose of alcoholics is to help the alcoholic to sell something. So the thing is, we try to help the alcoholic. And I'm really addicted myself, and I get outside issues. That's why the thing is but for Alcoholics Anonymous, some people come to Alcoholics Anonymous still alcoholic only. It's a weird thing to take them. They haven't been injected. Some people have no drugs, and that's fine. And this is AA, and that's what the thing is. Monster shit. That's why they call it outside issues out there. Drugs outside issues. Sometimes it's a catch all phrase. But no, the thing is, but personal state, I got my first DUI. The first or second year I was there, I got my first DUI. Over there on the north side of the school, got my first DUI there, and quickly after that, I got my second DUI back in Solera. And you've done the dumbest moves in life, and you're the dumbest dumbass. That's not false sense. This one's right here, because my first DUI was something I didn't have to get. I was busting me for a hot marijuana pipe, an outside issue in the car, and I thought one of my junior sensors said, whatever you pull over, always ask for a urine test, because you can always fight that court. Yeah. So they have my baby telling me that I should ask for a urine test. So the guy's been busting for a hot marijuana pipe, it's my middle suffocation, and I'll let him go. But I started calling it in for his unit after he gives me the sobriety test, which I passed. I passed that way because I was doing other outside issues, which make me kind of a weight. So I did the finger to finger faster than he did. And he made a bumper line, did okay. But when I was calling in, I started on my lungs. I go, I demand the urine test. I demand the urine test. I said, well, I just kind of bust for a hot marijuana pipe, but you should run your test, we'll do the urine test. With that urine test, came back a drunk driver. That was my first year.
So if you think you made some dumb moves in your life, you know, I think that counts. But anyway, but besides that, I was closed out once on this Vaughn Rutherford, who since passed away, who was head of the NCADD program in Missouri, from Europe. So I took some meetings in partnership. And I didn't think I was like, those were my first AA meetings. And I didn't think I was like this one. Because they were partnership meetings for a little while. They were a surprise celebration. Anyway, and Christian, can you hear me through this mask? Can I take it off? Or is it muffled?
Yeah, okay.
Oh, is it okay?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
That's what I said, yeah. We're good distance. Anyway. The thing is this feels better. But Bill and others were there at this meeting, and not this Bill, but another Bill, but this was back in 1984. And this sobriety celebration, where they were stomping on the floors and shot and screaming for sobriety because they did a sobriety pattern on the start of the meeting, you know. And Nickerman would always get a big book. And it was a real cool meeting, you know. It was really neat. And the thing is, I didn't let this at all because, I mean, you know, I think back then, it's really cool. I kind of related off because there were people like Oli there, Oli was back there, and others were going on about what's going on. A little profane, because Oli was, of course, there, so Oli was a little bit profane one night, and then others were just, you know, paddling along, shouting and screaming. And I said, this is a bunch of jackals. I said, I don't like these people. You know? And, Dottie L. and the central office manager, the original one, was there. And anyway, I didn't think I was like these people, so I started going away to passed that semester, and I went back up to Shaver Lake. My dad had a cabin, worked in a restaurant, the sawmill restaurant there, and started drinking. Because they thought I was away from home, I was away from anyone else, and I was in AA. They're trying to go to the time to get sober. So I started drinking out there. And spent the whole winter break up there at the Shaver, skiing and getting drunk and loaded. And I came down to Fresno State. And the first weekend, my buddy, who was the manager of the restaurant there in Shaver, came down and we partied one Saturday morning, and I get to drive down to Tulare in a blackout with an ice chest full of vodka and ices two glasses on ice, because I was going to go by and charm one of my lady, Elizabeth B., from a business owner from Tulare, who has since died of alcoholism. Anyway, so I was going out there to charm Elizabeth. My truck was half gallon of vodka and a bottle of fluid, glasses on ice, and I was going to go to her house and party. Never made it there. So I pulled up 99 and right there at Prosperity, and there's a motel road. There's two motels right there in Prosperity, and I from Blackstone, and I thought I'd see one of the cars pulling out. And I was pulling out into the Blackstone, and I see one. And that was my second one. So I went to the carry unit in Vera, and five came up to the house also the day after the accident. And my face was all in stitches. I had tore my right eye, and I almost tore my nose off. And I was all stitched up. My face was swollen out like a beer. I put my coat over. He goes, well, you had enough. I said, well, I was in the fog, and he goes, well, the first one, you much lighter on your sentence than you did. Shoot me before you report it rather than after. So I said, let's get sober. So once we carried it in, the mission program was on hold then at Fresno State. And I, this was back in 1984, and I, or 1985, January 26th, 85 was my last drink. So I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and was partying around and went to meetings, and then I then ended up hanging out with the mom. I was trying to hang out with my old friends, and it didn't work. I couldn't do that. And so I started partying again. I wasn't drinking, but started doing other outside issues. So hence, I'm not my sobriety date, that's the day of King Pinsel, which is September 1686, the aftermath of the day. And I was in Alcoholics Anonymous for a year and 9 months. Living my life. I was in January of 85, and a year and 9 months in AA. Living my life, trying to get the sense of sobriety under my belt. But once I got real with myself and said, you can't do this anymore, you can't live the lie. And I was going to the meetings, even in, even drinking, and even using those outside issues. And I was popping bodies in my eyes, chewing gum. And I thought I was, it's a fool. But actually, they always said, I'm sure they knew I was loaded, but they said, keep coming back. Just keep on coming back. And I did. And, I've had poor prayer sign for a year, and I was able to, get real with everyone else on September 1686. I was, I said, no, I'm using in AA. I've been using. I think I need to knock my sobriety down. Hey, which one I did? These were open meetings, and I, but since then I have had a great life. Of course, I didn't get any more DUIs after I quit drinking, but I mean, life sure shit got better after the results. It wasn't even lying more than as if to be honest with you, who I was. So by doing that, I was able to earnestly start working the steps and really get a good sponsor. And, that sponsor I had first had was Chet from Clovis. We started the Grocery Scholarship Program Pulaski, which was just a low ceiling building, virtually, that when they allowed smoking, smokers haven. You walk in the room on Friday nights and smoke, and the room, they have the door open, and a cloud of smokers. I'm waking up for them. You push your head down some machines, oh, hey, amen. Look at it, smoke, and sit down. But it was very interesting. But, soon after that, though, the community came not smoking. Chet helped me with these, you got about 15 minutes. Chet helped me out with these, steps and doing those steps for the first time. And the thing what I really got out of that was, that I wasn't alone anymore. I wasn't in this thing alone, and that. All this bullshit that I've been hiding in my head, he done things similar to those things. He shared part of his story with me when we did the steps, when we did that fourth and fifth step. So, I really didn't really get to the sixth and seventh step until I was in some major pain back in, after I moved back down here to about to Portable, a long time ago. Worked that fourth and fifth step and shared myself with the sponsor and let them know who I was. And by doing that, the cat was out of the bag. No more lies were ever in my head. No more lies trying to tell myself who I thought I was. So it was a real great opening for me. And the eighth and ninth step was good for me because it really got the, even though I was able to get some feel away part of the anger, I was able to clean up part of the records of my past, all my past, and clean that up, and be able to walk comfortable inside on the screen. That's what the ninth step has done for me. They've been a great, it really has given me freedom, that ninth step has, for some reason, to get rid of the, clean up my records, and be able to move on from there. So, the 10th step is, of course, what I do today. And I did the 10th step a few days ago, last week at work. And so even at 35 years of sobriety, still gain the steps. I still gain the benefits of working the steps. So I did the 10th step, in the human ends, last week at work. And by me doing that, by me saying I'm wrong, what I've done, when the same opportunity comes about again in the future, make the same wrong, those voices on my head would flip. Wait a second, you said you were wrong when you did that last time. Maybe you shouldn't do it this time. And maybe you should be a little more, most times it's the pain, just my mouth getting in the way.
usually gotta get out there. Say something or whatever.
I'm sorry, I just wanted to shut up.
And not going to up, going to up.
By doing those things in Alcoholics Anonymous, the sex will change my behavior for the better. So much so. I mean, I'm going to walk inside, pumping inside my skin. Which is before.
It's a great, great trainer. Because I was, you know, that's why I drank. I was pumping sun on my skin. I wanted to get the beans out of my head. And for a while, and I drank. And I was ashamed of some things I was doing because I was not comfortable with that and other things. And that's why I drank. So I drank because I, well, first of all, I like to drink. Just, again, get that buzz and also to get the temporary relief of the mind going crazy. But I was very much relieved when I could work on myself by working the steps.
Well, part of this, one of those things about the steps is, you know, we doing a 12 step, you know, doing carry messages and shapes. It's two things that really keep me sober, really, I think, are important for the person to, if he's new or having any problems with the program at all, is that wants to know. What's the magic bullet? Well, there's no magic bullet in AA, but you know, a good thing that will help you is working the steps and also being a service, getting involved with service work and being a part of. And for me, personnel is just alone and not really, again, with low self-esteem. A person being alone and not knowing where to turn, the service work is helping me tremendously. My sponsor really gave me the service work and my third and second the second sponsor did with Dennis, he really pushed it hard to get the service. And that thing is service work has been tremendous. People in the rooms, Bill especially, they know about service work because they've done it. And the benefits of being in service are great because when you give back to Alcoholics Anonymous, first of all, you give back to Alcoholics Anonymous, it was free to give to you. And you fill a need of AA. You feel a job with Alcoholics Anonymous that comes up and that's needed. You feel it, and it's more than you can. And by doing that, you know, I'm going to get out of myself. Because I tell you, that moment in crisis, my head will just scream. But I'm with others in recovery. I at the New Year's dance, or stepping up for the New Year's dance, which we used to have every year for the central office, and or taking a meeting. Marcus has experience doing that. I don't know over there, Christian. And you know, taking a meeting and making coffee and cleaning up afterwards. By that, you're part of Alcoholics Anonymous. You're in AA. You're in AA. You it's hard to get away. I talked about it this afternoon about the books of Alcoholics Anonymous. Excuse me, it in you. And when the books of Alcoholics Anonymous get in you and set by you being a part of and being involved, your life will turn around and change. I know it. But it has done that for me. Of course, you feel as a self-centered and egotistical in that asshole in the sandbox. Groups me an asshole in society. And so the thing is that that feeling of why me that I had in the sandbox, you know, why does this happen? Because it doesn't occur very much anymore because I try to give to others. Just really give to me and also try to be a good employee at work. You know? Because like someone said before, they lost jobs. And, when I lost jobs, I'm very surprised. I can get a job down for more than, you know, 6 or 7 months. When I had my first anniversary of a year long, being employed a year long in work, like now I'm probably my third or fourth year in sobriety, everyone clapped, you know, because at the meeting, the Sierra Sky Park, which was a meeting, it was my home group up there at Fresno. But, for me to be employed for one full year was amazing. So I was getting fired. I was always stressed somehow, and I always, you know, I would be better, you know, it's just me. I mean, I'm a good researcher. I know what's going on. Right now. It's saying, trying to go find out now. But, you know, that makes me, again, my mouth would miss a kick in the brain. But the suggestions about Paul Sinan's and trying to observe as much as I can and trying to shut off the brain and shut my mouth
a lot.
And not, believe you me, I shoot and talk a lot sometimes, but, you know, at work, I'll do what they're doing. I'm there to do a job. I'm there to do what they're paying me to do, right? So I try to do that. And by doing that, and by working, I have a good life today. And really appreciate you guys being here. And really appreciate everyone online. It's kind of good meetings on Zoom. This is Zoom.
Yeah.
On a Zoom meeting. Wow. Anyway, but it's kind of neat. And if you're new, stick around at Fox Anonymous and keep on coming back. Go to meetings as much as you can in the beginning. Be a part of. Jump in A with both feet. Make a splash. Right? Make a splash. And be a part of. And you can take a service position and, take a meeting or clean a coffee pot or scoop up afterwards. Take some trash out for the group. Go for it. You know, because I know that by doing that for myself, it has saved me.
All right.
Well, I think you did
recently celebrate 35 years, right?
Yes.
September 2nd, I
think? 6th. 6th, yes.
That's right, September 6th.
Yep.
Congratulations, John. Thank you for coming out tonight.
Thank you.
So we are now going to start the discussion portion of the meeting, and we'll invite people online and in person to participate. So we'll go back to John and ask him to pick on some people. We try to maybe mix it up
alternate a little bit.
Yeah,
sure.
Alternate a little bit. And so I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to turn this around so that the people online can see the audience, and then you and I can use. Let's see if we can make this right.
Amazing Bill, he's a tech genius.
Yeah. Let's see about that. So, why don't you go ahead and pick on someone, and you can pick somebody on here or someone in person.
Okay. Mike Kelly.
Oh, actually.
Mike Kelly.
Mike doesn't have a microphone.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he's the only one that doesn't have a microphone. Everybody
else. Sorry, Mike. Okay. How about Marcus?
There we go. Hello, Marcus.
But anyway, taught me how to basically live on last terms. I get into, well, I'm able to do stuff like we got to figure it out and volunteer and stuff like that. We have a good time. We have a program. They have more fun than I ever thought it. So I'm sober to have. That's something I haven't done. I can have fun fishing without drinking. Or whatever, it's outside stuff. But how do you do that? You didn't come overnight. I didn't show up and be like, oh, this is great. I like to spend some time. My new addiction is coffee. No. Straight out, I got to sit there and watch a lot of you because I'll sit here and drink. I'm kind of out of two out here and then go home and I'm going to learn how to drink with sleep. But that's the worst problem I have today with recording. I walk away, the days I didn't say I know. Because I have problems. I have a problem. I have a living problem. My sponsor said, you don't got a drinking problem, you got a living problem. Let's take your bullshit. Sure enough, a couple years later, holy hell, I got problems. I got problems. I don't know how to talk to my wife, I don't know how to communicate, I don't know how to communicate properly when I'm pissed off. These are things that I've had to learn. It's like growing up all over. Well, from the first time, that's okay. My sobriety date is February 8th of 2017. So hopefully if I'm able to make it to that time this year, that's 25 years. That's amazing. That's not more than a plan. No, I mean the name wasn't on my bucket list growing up. When I was little, I didn't want to say, this is what it is. Thanks for your share. Tell people come back next.
Hey, thanks, Marcus. Okay, so here's your list again.
Okay.
So this is somebody on the phone, and then you've got these names.
Okay.
The phone number ended in 8442. I don't know who's there.
Yeah. So the person who's on the phone with 8442, if you'd like to share, we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, my name is David. I'm an alcoholic. Hello?
Hello?
I just started joining this past month or so. So I'm just trying to see how I relate to most of you, and I can relate to a lot of you. I've been drinking more heavily now for the past 5 years. Just had some situations with, being separated and fighting with my ex and not being able to see my girls a lot. So just started drinking, partying, going out a lot, meeting a lot of people. It was fun, but I just get into a lot of trouble. I meet a lot of people and that's what, keeps me outgoing, but been trying to slow down. I haven't drank in about 2 weeks now.
Wow.
I would drink a lot to relax me more and forget about a lot of my problems and things happening in my life. And it helped. It worked. Now I'm trying to do it sober and trying to, I don't know. I don't even know how to have fun being sober anymore, because usually I just go to work and come home and work out. And I'm usually by myself unless I go out. So I don't even know what to do when I'm not drinking. So I'm just trying to figure all that out. So I think that's it right now.
Sure.
Yeah, thanks, David.
How about Bill?
Okay. So I'm an alcoholic, Bill Hasman, and
it's funny to think about the connecting dots in my life. So I was a teenager in the early 80s. I was staying for the summers with my dad up at Huntington Lake, and my dad had, actually, he didn't have his hobie cat yet. It was later. You and Roscoe had your boats. And I've always been, I guess, sort of attracted to the flame or to risk, and out on a lake where there's sailing going on, these catamarans really look exciting. And they can be very exciting to sail on. And so I managed to, elbow up next to one of the guys that had a boat like John's and started sailing with him. And it was, God, the first time I got on the boat, I think we flipped the boat three times and ran into another boat. It was crazy. And I was hooked. Damn, I just loved it. And then John and I were both from Tulare, and so my dad knew John, and so my dad was John's swim. So I'm going to keep going because there's a lot of dots to connect here. So I kind of paddled around a little bit with John. John was a little erratic, so you could never count on him being anywhere when you thought he might be there, but he'd show up, and then we'd go and do things we shouldn't ought to be doing. He mentioned, we called her Lizzie, right?
Yes. Elizabeth?
Yes. Minnie. That's the name. Yeah. So John talked about dating Minnie, and I, one of my friends in high school was Minnie's little brother, John. And John's parents were some of the early, They were AA members, and I had no idea. I didn't know what AA was. I'd never heard of it before. And here, these dots are connected, right? One of my best friends, his parents are in AA, and then I meet John. I find out John's dating John's sister, I got to, or had to, depending on how you look at it, I got to watch alcoholism ravage my friend's sister. Many, many died of very unpleasant circumstances. She drank herself to death. And I didn't really appreciate what I was seeing. I just couldn't really understand it, I guess. And so then off about the same time you got sober, I joined the Army. In fact, January of 85, I went off to the Army. You started getting sober, and I started drinking professionally. traveling around the world and going to the land of big beers. Over in Germany, they had bigger beers and stronger beers. And I don't know why, but for some reason, it seemed to me like drinking more made me, I thought, if I could drink more, it made me more of a masculine man, is what I thought. I found out later I was wrong about that, but anyway, I thought it would be great to be able to outdrink some of my friends when I came back home, and so I promptly set out to do that. And the funny thing is what happened for me, and I didn't even, I completely missed it. But as I progressively allowed drinking to become a more and more important part of my life, the people who didn't drink became more invisible in my life. They just weren't around. Like, they weren't in the bars with me. And so they continued to exist, but I was unaware of them. And the people that I became aware of, and so it seemed normal to me. It seemed normal to me to do things like make a decision about what restaurant you're going to go to based on what beer they serve. I think about that now, and I think, geez, wouldn't you think the food would be important? but it didn't matter. food was food. I needed to make sure I had my beer on tap or whatever. And so progressively, instead of engaging in maybe what you might call wholesome activities in the community, I'm finding more and more activity. Oktoberfest in Germany and going to just ridiculous things. And you know, the crazy thing though is that somehow, I guess, I don't know if you call it fortunate or unfortunate. A real close friend of mine that I met in my first year of junior college here at COS, he and I had a very similar track. Drank and used other things in a very similar fashion. But he had a knack for getting in trouble. He would drink two or three beers, and the cops would be pulling him over, and he'd get popped. And I would have five or six. I'd have two open beers in the car. The cops would pull me over. I don't know how, but I would drive away. I mean, it just was insane. And it used to really upset my friend because he was envious that I always got away with this stuff. And it seemed like I was the lucky guy. But you know what happened is for me is my life just progressively got lonelier and lonelier and lonelier. And I would chase after women that I was physically attracted to, and I would pretend to be the man that I thought they wanted. I would take them to restaurants that I thought would impress them. I would just really sort of remake myself into this alternate character so that she would want to be with me. And then the dilemma that I always faced was that as soon as I caught her, then this whole other way of thinking would emerge, and I would become obsessed with this idea that I had no business with this girl, that as soon as she figured out who I was, she was going to leave anyway, and I don't want to be around to let her hurt me. So what I would do, and this was completely subconscious, I was not aware of this at the time, but you know, later on when I got into AA and began going through the process of inventory, I began to see how my drinking would spike when I would get into relationships. And right about the time that they started getting kind of comfortable with me, my drinking would just go through the roof, and I would, my behavior would be erratic, and ultimately, it would come down to she would say something about my drinking, and okay, now she's crossed the line. It's time to get a new her, right? Now she's not good enough for me. Because by God, I'm a man, I'm going to drink, so I'm going to damn drink. Don't tell me what I can't do. And so I have this long pattern of establishing relationships with some really great women, some women who maybe not so great, but I was fortunate to meet some really, really decent women and completely destroy any hope for a relationship, because for me, drinking was more important. And I just couldn't see it. And, you know, again, in retrospect, I look back and I think about how I always felt like, you know, I deserved more promotions at work, and I deserved better jobs and better cars and better houses and everything else. And I did well, but it was never quite enough. And thinking back about those times, I have to wonder, how many opportunities did I miss because of my drinking, right? So maybe I didn't end up going to jail like some of my friends did. Initially, I did end up going to jail because of my drinking. I was in a very, very unfortunate boating accident and very nearly took the life of a dear friend when I hit him with the propeller of the boat while we were skiing and I was trying to have fun. So it did end in some bad ways for me. But, you know, even that, that boating incident happened 7 years before I got sober. So for 7 years after that, I continued to just cause wreckage in people's lives. And the kind of wreckage that I would create would be kind of subtle, right? I mean, it wasn't all about, jails and and hospitals and stuff and hurting people in demonstrative ways, but also, you know, how many Thanksgivings or Christmases or whatever would I go to at my sister's house, for example, and insist on leaving after drinking copious amounts of liquor and acting a fool, and my family members are trying to tell me, oh, just stay here tonight, or we'll take you home, and God damn it, I'm the man, and all. And how many nights did my family, my mom, you know, just in terror, wondering if I was going to kill myself or somebody else? And those are the kinds of things that I have to think about that I've done. And so, you know, like John, I had some people kind of come into my life and suggest that maybe there's a better way. And I don't know how you guys first responded to that, but I wasn't really on board with the whole idea. I really thought that this was an exaggerated reaction. I didn't think it was really necessary to quite go this far. And what happened was, as long as I did, like just like John said, you know, as long as I didn't commit, as long as I didn't actually apply myself to the process of recovery, I could continue to, at best, stay sober for short intervals in between drunken sprees. And eventually, you know, it wasn't an altercation with a significant other. It wasn't a night in jail. It wasn't, you know, another lost job. It was just another episode where I was convinced that all I needed to do to quit drinking and to quit getting into trouble from drinking was to just make a decision and to just stop drinking. And I made that decision, and it lasted for 120 days, and I got loaded again. I couldn't believe that I got loaded again. And so I went back to AA with my tail between my legs. I was ashamed, embarrassed, I was defeated, and I had a plan. I was going to go and volunteer for the Red Cross. The Katrina storm that just went through New Orleans, it just happened. And I was going to go back there and do some monumental, you know, community thing. And a guy in the back of the room said, hey, man, you know what? They need help right here in the Alano Club. Maybe you could volunteer here. You know, you don't have to go. You don't have to join the Red Cross or the, you know, Greenpeace or anything else. You can just sweep a few floors, maybe. And he said, maybe you should call your sponsor. And I did. It really broke my heart that he wasn't surprised that I had drank again. I hadn't done any of the step work, so he wasn't surprised. And he gave me some pretty simple instructions and told me if I really wanted to stay sober that there was just a few simple things I was going to have to do. And today's, what, the 19th or 18th? 19th. So it's 8 days, 5 months, and 16 years since that day. And I'm astounded that I'm still sober. But my life is pretty good. I just celebrated a year in a job last Wednesday, and I quit the job on Friday. In 2 weeks, I started a better job, by golly. You know, and the last couple of times I started a new job wasn't because I had just quit one. It was because I've been unemployed and living off the government tip for a minute, you know. And so I feel really good about this. I'm actually making a change for the better as a choice. So anyway, it's quite more than enough out of me. So I'm going to be quiet. Here's your list of folks.
Okay. How about Leah?
Lee, you want to share?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, my name's Lee. I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Can you hear me pretty good, pretty well? Cool. All right. Thank you for your share, John. I've had a lot of trauma myself as far as, you know, your jaw. That's an ow. Couldn't imagine hurting my face. I mean, I've been stabbed in the back, and I burned myself from here to here. Drinking and doing other things, but the jaw, Al. Thank you, Bill, for your share. I actually got to hear a little more of Bill today. That was pretty good. That was good. I call him my superhero, really, because before this last year, it was probably about August when I finally had stopped drinking again. I was in the room still. I was still going to meetings and still doing all that. But I was drinking on the side, and when I had stopped, I said I had went to Texas and took a hit of a wax pen and called that my relapse, you know. It wasn't until I think probably about maybe October, September that maybe no, more like December, sometime before Christmas, where I was it was just eating at me, you know, because everyone thought my relapse was that wax pen or whatever, you know. But in all reality, those who knew me well knew there was more to it, you know. I had been drinking since, what, it wasn't long after the baby was born that I had started drinking again, you know. I could call it postpartum depression, whatever it was. I just used any excuse just to sneak that drink, you know what I mean? And my life was good. Everything was great. I was of service, you know. I had no reason, no, but it's just, that's just, I'm an alcoholic, you know. I took that one drink and I couldn't stop. The thing that feared me most was that embarrassment Bill was talking about, that shame, that guilt, like, you know, coming back into the rooms after a relapse. And it was hard enough, let alone the truth, you know, that I had already been drinking for months. And what kept me grounded, for one, is Valley Group, for sure. I mean, Phil told me after my relapse, he was like, I got a hook in you, and I'm not letting go. He's like, he said, I'm not letting go. And that meant a lot to me. I always felt like the black sheep. I always felt kind of out of place, you know, like I didn't belong nowhere, or nobody got me, nobody understood me. But Bill always has a way of letting me know that that I'm loved and that I'm cared for, and that there's people out there that want me to be safe, you know. And honestly, I don't know what I would have done if I didn't reach out after my relapse. You know, I was embarrassed, all that, and I didn't want to code for this meeting. My sponsor, she said, you know, we're going to go on to this business meeting, and you're going to tell everybody that your clean date's changed. And I was like, shit, are you for reals? Like, how on the spot embarrassing is that, you know? And so I did just that before the meeting. I felt like I owed it to I don't know, maybe to make myself feel better a little bit, or just to make this process easier. I called Bill and I told him, hey, so you know, before the meeting, business meeting, I'm gonna come out the closet, you know what I mean? And he shared a little story with me, and it's one that I always remember, because he put it into layman's terms for me, something that I can understand. I'm very grateful for that call, very grateful for reaching out, because it helped me so much. And to this day, it helps me, you know. It really does. I used to call the AA book, I used to call it my nerve. Whenever I would feel nervous, anything, I would go and bring my book everywhere with me. I call it my nerve, you know. And that's it. It's just one of those things that I carry with me and take everywhere with me, because it reminds me that there's others, people that go through the same thing that I go through. There's people that have been through it many times, you know, that I'm not a lost cause. Through my life, I've been through so different things, weird things. I've been a sister wife, you know what I mean? And being a sister wife, I was one of three women, and it left me feeling like I wasn't enough. You know, I'm sure you guys can relate with that feeling of not feeling like you're enough, you know? And I always felt like if I'm not enough, I'm not good enough. Nobody understands me, so on and so forth. But that moment that I had with Bill, it reminds me every day that people love me. There's people that love and care for me and want me to be safe. And as long as I can stay sober and meet my sponsor and read my book and my steps and, I also do NA and be a service. I have a chance at life, a life that I can remember for one. Because a lot of my drunk time, I didn't remember shit. I was slutty for beating somebody up, and don't remember half. I lit myself on fire. I mean, who does that? Like, you know, I got stabbed in the back is because I wasn't aware of what was, like, you know, just stupid little things like that. And I could have died, but I didn't. I'm here. And just this last couple, week or so, I've been starting to feel kind of like, oh, like this COVID shit's like horrible. Especially since I don't have no symptoms. My baby don't have no symptoms, but
Are you there, Leah?
I reached out, call my sponsor when I needed to, join some other meetings online, and met some people in New Orleans this week, you know, and that was a pretty cool experience. They're really friendly, you know, and I just really grateful for this program. I mean, if it wasn't for everybody in it and all these tools that I have gained, I honestly had no idea where I would be, but I don't want to find out. I just am very, very grateful. And Jim and Bill, you guys have been right there the whole time. Love you guys so much. And John, it was really good to hear your story. Maybe I want to go on a boat ride. No, I'm just kidding. But, with that, I'll take another 24. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ed. Hey, my name is Greg. I'm an alcoholic.
Okay.
It's my first meeting since I got a DUI in 2016. Thinking back, it's about 5 years ago now. I came to meetings to fulfill my legal requirements at that time, and I found the Serenity Seeker group. I was sober for almost 3 years on my own after that. Felt great about it. And then my wife, who had been my fiance, actually girlfriend at the time of the DUI, she stuck with me. And she, not having known me throughout my early 20s when I was just a total idiot, drinking all the time, making everybody ashamed of me, not ever being ashamed of myself. At the same time, you know, I was perfect. I was passing all my classes. I was in the jobs. I was doing everything right. When in fact, it was all wrong. Because I was just this drinking moron. And but plenty of outside issues as well. Went to party, rock and roll, going to concerts. Just life was great. The DUI sobered me up, scared me. And it took a couple years, but my wife and I together were convinced that we could drink some wine sometime to do this. I had a nice beer at a restaurant. Slowly but surely, I drove back to my house place. I've only driven maybe 3 times when I was drunk, but one time was enough after that to run there. I thank God that I haven't been in trouble getting used. My life's been on the up and up. I have a new career. I'm in graduate school. Everything is right for me right now. Except the fact that I've continued to trick myself into thinking that I can drink responsibly. And it culminated this past Monday with me drinking about as much as I have ever since I began again. And for like 7 hours straight with pals, a beer in my hand the whole time, shots of whiskey. Only 2 weeks after I said I was going to stop drinking for my semester, because I don't drink during school. So my wife was expecting not to drink at all at the point. And I drove home. And I was starting a new job the next day. First job in my career that I'm going to graduate school for. First day was the next day. And I decided to drink and drive. Like, this is the most... self-destructive thing I could have possibly chosen to do. Mm-hmm. I did it. And our fourth wedding anniversary was on a Friday, and we had big plans to go to the coast and celebrate this new job. Instead, I'm sleeping on the floor of my study, and my wife won't talk to me, and she went to the coast by herself. And I had to promise her, first of all, but I really need to promise myself, because nothing's ever going to get done if I don't promise myself, and I need to help myself to whatever extent possible to not drink, because those 3 years not drinking were amazing. And the only thing I could fault myself for were all the little things that I could expect from a person. But drinking was always above and beyond a mistake in the end. And I just gotta change my ways. I gotta get straight. I didn't afford for a while on my own, and my wife's support, and my ex-boss from the job I just previously left. I was there for 8 years with him, and he was sober all the time on his own. And he had tremendous problems. He went through divorce in his 20s. He went through all of it. He was just about my age now when he got sober. And he's there to support me. And I've been talking to him all week. And he's done therapy. We're going to do couples therapy, and we're going to do whatever it takes. But right now, I'm in the doghouse as deep as I ever could have imagined. You know, it's like I never felt this way in my life. And the self-defeat after all that self-denial is bitter, because I feel like I deserve feeling like this for now, but I know I can rest about it, and I really appreciate hearing everybody. When I came in the past, there were always great speakers, and thank you so much today to both you guys and all you guys for talking and hanging out, and Leah and everybody else. It's good to know that there's other people who struggle and got past it for whatever amount of time, and that's where I want to be.
Glad to hear it, Greg.
Please stay. Please stay.
Yes.
Stephanie?
Yeah, Stephanie, would you like to share?
I'm driving right now.
Okay. All right, well, so that's enough, huh?
Yeah, that's everybody on there.
Okay.
All right. So we only have one person left.
Sorry. Jim.
Jim?
Are we out of time? Watson is still. Hey, all. I'm Uncle Sugar Jim.
Jimmy!
Thank you, John, for sharing. Thank you, everybody, for sharing. If you want to get out of your car and stop by 914 West Street. West Center Street, yeah. I was coming here tonight, and I was on the other street down there, like Main or something. I'm going, this building looks totally different. It's like all done now. It was a little house. It was just like, I don't know. I was like, dang, Bill's not here yet. What the heck's going on? So I started with the resentment tonight that everybody ditched me and I couldn't find Bill. Because I was on the wrong street. Where do I begin? I'm an alcoholic. Today, even almost 7 years sober, I see a beer commercial, or I see mixed drinks at a wedding last night, or I see Snoop Dogg walking down the beach with a Corona, and I go, that looks great. I can do this. That's all me, man. He's got self-control, and my mind is under the delusion that I can pick up a drink and walk down the beach with Snoop Dogg again. Or at the wedding last night, I can pick up a beer, everyone else is fine. Sure, it's fine. Or, Red Robin. That burger sure would be a good for the beer. But the reality is that I need to come to meetings to hear your stories to remind me that I'm an alcoholic and, oh shit, I can't pick up that drink. My story is a lot like a lot of yours, where I would quit and then I would drink, and I would quit it and I would drink, and I would quit and I would drink. And that lasted for a solid 15 years of my 30 years of drinking. And that was just the last 15 years. And I have a journal of blaming God for most of it during those 3 years. But wondering every time I got kicked out of the house or why I made a fool of myself the night before, why he let me do it. You know, and eventually he answered me because he said, well, I want you to be an AA, but somebody needs to invite you. And so, up until then, I was a pretty good hider of my drinking. My family was kind of onto me. I decided to go to a wedding one night, and I was committed to not drinking. I was not going to drink tonight, and because this was a big fancy wedding, and it would not be good for me to even begin. So I didn't get warmed up at home that day. In fact, I took some outside issues, a whole bunch of them, to make sure I was relaxed enough at the wedding. And the first opportunity where somebody invited me to have a beer, I took it. And then I grabbed a second on my own because one is never enough. And so I had those two beers, and that's kind of why they call me Two Beer Jim. And those two beers just that got me warmed up on the night that I had promised myself that I would not drink. And the next day I woke up and I found that my family had left, kids were gone, had a note sitting on the counter, get out of the house, don't come back until you get better. I had a phone call. See, this is where God intervenes. So I got a phone call from one of our really young members, who's one of my family members, and she goes, hey, Uncle Jimmy, I heard you had a great night last night. And she was there at this wedding. She was there watching me twist and turn down the slippery slopes of alcoholism. And I didn't understand why she was so happy in the morning when she called me. And then she said, hey, I'm going to a meeting tonight. Do you want to go? And it was actually Sunday night Serenity Seekers about six and some days ago at the old Red Cross building. And she picked me up for probably a whole week and brought me to a meeting every night as I moved out of the house and I wasn't living there anymore. And the first night that I got here, somebody opened up a big blue book and they started reading some passages out of it. And I heard what I needed to hear that night. And it was that There were other people like me out there who couldn't get help. And then when I heard that in the book, I go, well, it's got to be true because it's written in the book. You see, so, Pastor Arden, I'm a teacher. It's written. It's written. It's all factual. Now, it's on the internet. It's all crap. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. So, at any rate, during the next month or so, I started heading to a meeting every night. My niece made me go ask this guy to be a sponsor, which felt like a date, which was embarrassing. But he said yes. And ever since then, we've had a wonderful relationship. He's kind of in this room right now, so he hears me. That's kind of a joke right now. But I'm so thankful to be here. Every day has its challenges. You know, like, I used to drink over everything. And, like, right now, my kids mostly, one of my sons is living in a situation that I disagree with, and my daughter never meets me on time when she's supposed to meet me at a certain place, and work just keeps piling on, and people seem to want money all the time for everything, and back in the day, drinking, these were all good reasons to drink, but today I don't have to drink over them. And I try to find, using what I've been taught and stuff, kind of my part in those things and what I can do about it. And the reality is I got two choices. I could forgive my daughter for not showing up and ticking me off every time. Or I could change myself and try to figure out a better path for me. So, and today I'm here, and it's good. It's good that I'm here. So, hopefully you guys can come on down here in person and see how beautiful this building is coming along. So, I'm Jim, and I'm all of it. Thank you, John.
All right. Thanks, Jimmy. So, we'll just wrap up some closing announcements here.